Janine Caldwell, she's an independent author, and the neat thing about Janine is she's doing this herself. She's self-promoted, she's self-published, and she's written 4 books. I actually came upon her through one of her blogs, which we'll talk about, on Facebook, her painful truth about Facebook, and it struck me, and I thought, oh, we need to talk to her, not to mention her writing and being a mom, a wife, balancing everything, and being a woman that's going after her dreams. So I was very intrigued by her.
The type of profile, empowering women we love, yeah, as guests. And Janine, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, that is so exciting. An independent author. I mean, so you're self-published, and that is an interesting route to go, because that means you've got to do pretty much everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, you do. And, you know, I started out trying to go the traditional route. I sent out, you know, probably 90 query letters to agents, and this was about 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, I really came across with struggling to get anyone to even respond or be interested, just because I didn't already have a presence as a writer, mm-hmm. and I'm not famous. So mm-hmm. It rarely happens these days where a newbie will get picked up by an agent. You kind of nowadays have to really go ahead and self-publish, and then prove that you can sell books and have a success before someone will be interested in you.
Right. And that's some would say that's a lofty dream and goal. And I'm curious, what made you decide to go for it? Because just to give a little background on Janine, she is able to be a stay-at-home mom, and obviously that's a lot of work. And what inspired you to actually go for it? Because that's, I think, something a lot of women struggle with, taking that actual step to do something so challenging.
Yeah, well, I was working with some junior high girls in a youth group, and we were just having so much fun breaking down this other young adult book we were reading. And, you know, I just hadn't been reading that much young adult, but I loved reading it, and I have this heart for teens. And I already have a degree in English, always loved writing, always loved literature, and I just thought, well, first of all, I just want to see, can I write a book? And so slowly but surely, I just kept working on it, until all of a sudden I had a book. And it took me a while. I published my first 2 books in a series at the same time, and it probably took me about 5 years. But it was these girls that really just motivated me to, I felt I had something to say to teens, mm-hmm. and I just felt this inspiration to do it. I needed the creative outlet, and I just thought, why not?
And you are also, to note, a clean writer, so she writes age-appropriate, And, you know, what you just said is something that I always talk about. You know, you just had something about these teens, something that told you, you're meant to do this. You know, we all have people will say, oh, why would you do that? That's, you know, you have kids, or you have a job, or you don't need, you know, whatever the reason might be to not do something, you'll hear them. So I think it's really neat that you actually felt that inside, and you are following it, because there's a reason you're going to help somebody and make a difference for somebody. So you're being, you know, you're speaking to your passion.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people get really intimidated because they look at the whole picture of, oh, I couldn't possibly do all that marketing, promoting, but, you know, or even just write that long of a book. And I just think you just try to do it a little day by day, just keep working mm-hmm. at it, instead of just like, oh, I have to get, you know, 80,000 words pumped out in a month. Well, that's not realistic. Maybe 3-4 pages a day, then slowly mm-hmm. but surely you do have a book.
And I agree with you that, you know, that's really important, really in any industry or anything one does, is if you look at the completed project, sometimes, you know, it's overwhelming, but if you just pace yourself, like a couple pages a day, a couple things a day towards whatever your dream is, that really seems to be very effective rather than trying to hit the home run and say, yeah, I need to get this done in a month. It could overwhelm a lot of people. Let me ask you a question about the teens that seemed to inspire you there. Was it, by any chance, the books they were talking about, the series of Twilight?
It was. This was about 7 years ago, and I think the first Twilight book was just coming out into the theaters, the first movie version. And I was like, what is this Twilight anyway? So I went to go see the movie by myself. All my kids were in school. And then I kept asking the girls to bring me their copies and waiting for the next one to come out and the next one. And just knowing about Stephenie Meyer living, you know, 45 minutes from us, that was inspirational. Like, okay, well, she's never written anything before. She's an English major. Well, maybe I could write too. So I wasn't necessarily, you know, wanting to write anything about vampires or werewolves, but her lifestyle, she was a mom of boys, and I just thought, well, you know, she's another inspiration to me of a woman who can do it, and so why not me?
Well, you see, and that's great inspiration. And by the way, though, just as a side note, is that, you know, it was meant for the younger, sort of teenager, I think, young adults, the series Twilight. However, that is one of my favorite of all-time movies, all of them. I think there's five of them.
It's very strange, Dave.
Yeah, but so let me ask you, you said you saw the movie by yourself. I also saw the movie by myself that first time, and I was just blown away by it. How did you like it?
Well, I thought it was great. I thought, you know, because I just love the whole teen, I love everything teen world. I go and watch all the teen movies, and I don't know why I have a heart for it so much. I guess it just, even though I'm in my 40s, for some reason I don't think it was that long ago for me to be in my teens.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and I can just relate to how emotional that time is, how everything is so exasperated, and your heart is on a sleeve, and I just really like that age group.
And, you know, there's no doubt, and of course it's been unbelievably popular. Of course, the movies did very, very well, I think, well, mainly with the younger crowd. However, if you look at that, and then we'll get on to your books, but I did want to mention that because anytime I hear the word Twilight, I just have to say something about these movies. But it didn't seem, you know, to me it seemed very spiritual. It seemed like, you look at the family, you know, who were they called? The Cullens. They were loyal. They were dedicated. It was all about family values. And I thought that was an interesting twist about vampires, how they were reframed, redefined as really, really good people.
Mm-hmm.
Or vampires.
Yeah.
I don't know. But did you see it that way, too? Very spiritual and very, very wholesome family.
I did. It was, even though there were vampires who were killers, this family
was... There were bad vampires, too, yes.
Right, but this family just shined with loving each other. I mean, it was love was the main characteristic of all of them.
Fascinating series. Truly one of my all-time favorites. Of course, Greg can't understand that, our producer here, and my son, but I think he liked it a little bit, too, so... Let's see, a couple more questions, and then we'll go on a quick break, and we'll be back with you. But, you went to California Polytechnic State University and then San Luis Obispo, and like you said, you have a degree in English. And so we have something in common because I went to Cal State Northridge.
Oh,
so
okay.
Sort of
that's
sister,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, sister school.
Yeah.
So, Did you know at that time when you were going to college that or did you have an inkling, a little, even a small inkling that you'd ever write a book?
Not really, because I didn't envision my life you know, having the freedom to be able to write a book. When I went to school, I just kept thinking, oh, well, I'll probably try to get a technical writing position, and that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I worked for a semiconductor company writing patents and trademark applications that were for chips and circuits, I mean, so far away from what I do now. And it wasn't until I was married and my husband, I'm blessed with the security of his job that he can pay our bills, my kids are a little bit older, did I think, you know, now I have all this time from 12 to 4, maybe I could write. And you know, when I was in my younger 30s, I did write a couple screenplays just for fun, but it didn't really stick. And then I moved on to novels. And then I realized, no, this is where I want to be. It's the novel.
That is very exciting. I mean, to live your dream is phenomenal. And Janine, stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with special guest Janine Caldwell, independent author and self-published. And we'll go over some of her books when we get back. This is Empowering Women, live from Regis West in Peoria. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Tara on Tunnels, and we'll be right back.
Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Talking loud, not saying much.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Empowering Women live from the Regis West Suites in Peoria. Of course, this is brought to you by Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Tara Zontanos. I love that name. I love saying Zontanos. Zontanos.
I know you do. And there's so much passion in
this. Yes, it's true. It's such an empowering name. That's what
I
like.
And I keep, my brother says in Greece it means to, the meaning is to live.
Oh, that's
even
better.
Better.
Yeah, we said better at the same time.
Yeah.
Wow, that was good. What do? They, you like, join the little fingers or something, and
oh,
or something
gosh.
Like that.
Well, actually, you say drink, so Dave, you won't be talking.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Anyway, and, of course, we have special guest, Janine Caldwell, a great author, has a lot of books she's written. And back to you, Tara, on some great questions you have.
So, Janine, I wanted you to have a chance to talk a little bit about the books you have written. I know you did a trilogy, correct?
Mm-hmm,
and
yes.
Wanted you to talk about the books and tell us a little bit about them. And you told me a little bit when we talked previously about your achievements with publishing so far. So if you could talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. The first three books are a trilogy called the Vortex Series, and the first book is Rematch, second book Double Fault, and the third book is Deuce. So obviously there's a little bit of a tennis theme going on in there. It's set in California and hits Arizona and Sedona specifically. It's told in dual perspectives, so the male character and a female main character are telling the story interchangeably. And it's Trent has time-traveling powers that he received from an ultimate vortex in Sedona, but it's for a purpose. He goes back in time and saves people from harm. And he goes back in time and he fails on a mission, and this is when the main character, Cassie, comes into his life. And so then it's a parallel world that they're switching back and forth from, and it kind of hits on the theme of if you could go back in time and change things, would you, and would that be for the best?
Mm.
So it has a little bit of, it's definitely a romance, but it has a little bit of action and a little bit of music, a little bit of tennis.
It sounds like, I haven't read these books yet, but they sound really fascinating. I like the theme. I mean, if you could go back in time and change things or save people from harm, would you? So is there, when you write these books or when you wrote the Vortex series, did you have a specific meaning that you would hope young adults would get from your books?
Well, I think it's to trust your values. There's a lot of family values that Cassie tries to cling on to with her family. And it's easy to go the easy route, but she knows her family is the most important thing to her. So it was that, and also just I do play on the topic of sex in teens and whether to wait, and, you know, they find true love with each other, and but she has an ex-boyfriend, and so there's, like, the teen issues about sexuality that comes into it. So it was go ahead.
No, you go ahead,
Oh, I just wanted to, you know, give teens the courage to wait to have sex if that's, you know, what their heart is telling them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's when I'm thinking of this, you know, I am thinking how your mind is working in the process, the creative process, to come up with this. You know, what kind of challenges do you face in that creative process of, you know, you have a thought, and then how do you take it from there to the next? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
Because it is really fascinating, the creativity in your books.
The process, I think, is different for every writer. when I came up with the Vortex series, I knew how I wanted it to end in the third book from the beginning. Now, I didn't know all the details when I started, but I just had this overall picture, and it kind of was up to the characters as I was writing to guide me. I knew what themes I wanted to keep with, but really a lot of it got filled in as I went along, honestly. I couldn't see every single detail right away. I really needed to get to know the characters. And also because Remap and Double Fault were my first two books, it was also just getting to know my style of writing and just all of how to do it. It's so different to just sitting down and actually doing it than always reading books yourself.
Yeah, it's so impressive because I know that, you know, I've written before, but I always think, oh, how fun it would be to write a book, and but to actually do it and sit down and complete a book, to me, it's an amazing feat.
It really is, because so many people say, yeah, I'm writing the book, and, you know, 10 years later, how's that book? Well,
yeah.
I'm writing the book. And so how do you do that, Jenny? How did you get motivated to get this done?
Yeah, it was just such self-motivation. I don't know. I just had so much fun once I got into the story that I just couldn't wait to get it on paper. I wanted, you know, my readers to finally see all three books, how it was going to play out, where I was going with this, you know, in each book. And it was just, that was motivation enough because I just enjoy it so much. I was just going to say, same with my fourth book. You know, the fourth book is a standalone book called Visited, and that definitely came easier because once you do get your writing style, I like to talk in the active present voice, it really does become easier. And the more you write, it's true, the easier it becomes. And if you get your story and you get excited by the characters, it does come a lot easier.
So when you were writing the Vortex series, what was your state of mind like? Was it similar to like enjoying a great movie, although you were the one creating the movie? Was it something like that? If it wasn't,
yeah,
how would you describe it?
It really was like that because like I said, how I didn't have all the details filled in from the beginning, and then a lot of it came as I was writing the story, I would get really excited, like, oh, yeah, that's good. I'm going to have that happen, and that will work with this. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, certainly there were days where I didn't feel like writing, and because I'm just doing this all for myself, I didn't write those days, but most of the time, as I got further on, I was like, every day I wanted to write because it was just, I wanted to get to the end.
So was it, you were like in a zone, almost mesmerized, I don't want to say hypnotized, but sort of like deep concentration and completely undistracted, I bet.
Yeah, I would sit down and it would, you know, it could be 11 o'clock in the morning, and the next thing I knew, it would be, oh, my boys are coming through the door. It's 4 o'clock. Like, whoa,
that's
where
amazing.
Did it go? Yeah. Because I'm the type who kind of edits as I go along. So I'm reading it, rereading it. And so, yeah, I'm like, whoa, how did 5 hours just go by?
Wow. And I think it's, you know, your story and what you're doing, it's kind of a lesson in discipline and motivation. You know, you have to be a very disciplined and motivated person to do what you're doing, but I think it's a good message for other women that, you know, it isn't always easy. She just said, I don't always want to write. You know, some days it flows and some days it doesn't. And I think sometimes women or, you know, anybody, I guess, in general, gets held, you know, you get stuck, and it's those days where you get stuck that you have to keep going and you keep pushing. And you know, the neat thing is that you you've chosen to keep going when you really, you don't, like you said, you don't, nobody's expecting these books from you. You know, you don't have to do this, and you're doing it, and that's really cool. That's really neat to me. That's a very inspiring thing.
Yeah, it's
you're an inspiration.
Don't give up. Don't give up. That's all I have to say. It's there'll be down days, but you'll get through them.
How did you get the tennis, at least, I was going to say theme, but at least the titles are from tennis. Was there some type of theme within the storyline regarding tennis or some type of analogy? Oh, there was. Okay.
Yes. The main character, Cassie, she's a tennis prodigy, and she has an accident when she's 11 years old where she gets shot on the tennis court in a tournament. Mm-hmm. And it plays on her future personality. It changes everything about her future because of that event. So each book is seeing if she goes back in time and Trent can change that, you know, will she become the tennis prodigy she was always supposed to be?
Wow. And that's what I'm saying about the creativity and how to come up with that.
Yeah, that's excellent.
I'm curious, did you ever think of any of these books, because it came from the whole idea started with the Twilight series, did you ever think maybe these would be made into a movie one day?
Well, that's the dream. That would really be amazing. That would be so much fun. But I'm kind of, you know, first of all, I still have to get an agent, and I have to sell a lot more books.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
That's right. You never know.
I mean,
that's why you keep going.
And your words, you know, it's almost like as you're describing the process of writing a book, it's almost like we're all here for a purpose, and your soul, your purpose is to speak these words on paper, and there might be a bigger meaning to all of that. It could be a movie. Who knows? You know, you never know where this could go.
I like it. Wow, we just got to get her an agent.
We just have to get her an agent.
Now, I was wondering, rather than tennis, why it wasn't football. If you know what I mean.
You're right. Well, I don't have any one-on-one experience playing football, but I do have experience playing tennis.
And you do have experience with, I guess your husband was a former San Francisco 49er.
Yes.
That's sort of cool.
He played in 94, 95, 96 seasons. We're both from the Bay Area, and we moved here to Arizona 12 years ago.
Wow. That's neat. That's very neat. And as far as the books go, what's your next step?
Well, you know, I'm kind of just feeling that out. I'm thinking about different stories, and I'm just kind of waiting for that real inspiring goose pimple I get when I know, okay, that's the story. I've only been published just a little over 2 years, and I have 4 books. So I've kind of just been, you know, taking a break. I released my 4th book just this past January. And, I'm just kind of resting and seeing, trying to get inspired again and get that motivation, because I do know once I start, you know, it is an everyday thing, and it's, you know, constantly in the back of my mind when I do start again. Mm-hmm. So I'm just taking a little breather.
And that's probably good in the process, I would think, to read – rejuvenate yourself. And I did want to note, in talking to Janine, I think it was your 3rd book, correct, that was top of Amazon in your category?
Released the final book in the Vortex series. It sat on the top 100 time travel teen books for a couple days, which was exciting for me.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah.
You got to be proud of yourself on that. Janine, do you have still some time? We want to take a quick break, and we have lots more questions to ask you. We find this really fascinating, but more important, empowering to our listeners and inspiring as well. So we will take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd like to ask Janine some of the other aspects of self-publishing, marketing, public relations, how that works, and really balancing her life. And this is the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. Empowering Women is the name of the show, starring Tara Zontanos, and live, and we are live from Regis West in Peoria. We'll be right back.
Take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633. Or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Back. get up. What it is, what it does, what it is, what it isn't. Looking for a better way to get up out of bed instead of getting on the internet and checking a new hit. Me get up. First shot, come strut walking. A little bit of humble, a little bit of cautious. Somewhere between like Rocky and Cosby for the game. Nope, nope, y'all can't copy yet. Blast.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Empowering Women, brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. We're live from Regis West in Peoria, beautiful setting, mm-hmm. right by the Peoria Sports Complex, mm-hmm. looking out at the blue skies and the green trees. Beautiful. And, of course, I'm Dave Isaac alongside Tara Zontanos. I just love both your names, actually. And how many times am I going to say that in one show? It's only been three times. And we also have a very special guest, author Janine Caldwell, writer, author of four books. Sounds fascinating. And I love that Vortex series. Of course, I'm a big fan of Sedona. The Vortex, I've been to many of those. I think there's four of them, maybe five up in Sedona. Really interesting. Now, Janine, you know, when you're self-published like this, there's a lot to this. How do you manage, number one, to find the time and also find the resources to do marketing, public relations, and probably assortment of many different things to get your books known out there in the public? How do you do it?
Well, you know, I just try to tackle a little bit every month. There's, you know, it's basically, it's all online. It's using Twitter. It's using Facebook, a website called Goodreads, where there's millions of readers, and you join other reading groups, and you just keep trying to get involved. And you can do these, they're called blog tours. You hire these companies who have a list of bloggers who those bloggers each have their own followers, and you give them free ebook copies of your books, and they do reviews, and then you publicize those reviews, and it's all about your Amazon wow. rankings, you know, giving you 4 stars, 5 stars, and that helps you go up in the ranks, and it's all mostly online. Although I do try to do some personal appearances as well.
Mm-hmm.
So like book signings, is that right? Things like that?
Right. Well, I had a shared a booth at the Tucson Book Festival because that's such a big festival. But as a self-published, you know, it's out-of-pocket cost for me to do those things. And so you have to kind of weigh out, will I meet a lot of teens, will I sell a lot of books versus what you're paying for the booth costs and the license to sell. And those are the things where if you were traditionally published, you would go under your publishing house.
So if you're traditionally published,
No, oh, I was just going to say, you know, they would probably, the traditional publishing houses, they could have a whole booth and they would assign like a writing signage time, and they'd have copies of your mm-hmm. books, and they mm-hmm. would provide all those, where I have to provide all my copies and hopefully sell them all if I go that route.
Right. Before the internet, well, is that basically how it was done? From, you know, before social media?
I don't really know, because when I started, it was right at this revolution of the ebook. And so right away, it was all about, you're going to probably sell more ebooks versus paperbacks, that the physical stores are going to start closing down, and it's going to be more online shopping. And every year, that percentage increases of ebook buying versus paperbacks and hardbacks.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, technology really is starting to change how business is being run in certain industries, and certainly books compared to e-books, that, and radio as well, by the way. We're on 1480 AM KPHX on Saturdays from 9 to 2. But with internet coming on strong with technology, you know, things are moving that way, where AM, FM may not be the dominant radio source anymore. So I could appreciate what you're doing. And in a way, it makes it easier. In a way, it makes the entrance into this industry of being an author easier as well. But mm-hmm. I think it's something Tara said earlier, if you don't have the discipline
mm-hmm.
and the creativity, the passion, it doesn't matter how easy it is to get into an industry because it won't be successful.
Right.
That passion.
Right.
And wouldn't you agree, Janine, that passion will drive the day?
Oh, definitely, because, you know, I can't imagine there are very many writers who love marketing, who love the promotion part, because basically all we want to do is stay with our characters and be writing in our little worlds. But we have to do this, and in this day, readers demand to be able to connect with us. They expect it, and they want to hear from you often. So you just have to know that that's part of the job.
And that's something after, I think, our next break, we're going to talk about your blog, because that you talk about that and how you are basically, you know, you're forced into the social media world to promote your books and to be noticed, and that's, you know, and then the other pains and struggles that come with being on Facebook and challenges, and you're very honest and I would call it a raw blog about Facebook, which I thought was really great, because I don't think a lot of people admit to that, and I think it's something that affects a lot of men and women using Facebook and social media these days. But before we get to that, I wanted to just kind of ask you, with the kids and the husband and, you know, all of the work you have to do as a woman and a wife and a mother, I'm sure you come into a lot of obstacles in your process, and what would you say your tools are for overcoming those obstacles? And how do you get through the day when, you know, those days that you said earlier you don't want to write? What is it that you do that makes you different than the person that gives up at that point?
Well, I think, number one, if I'm feeling like I'm not getting the time I need and want to write, and the demands of the family are bothering me, I have to go back to my faith and know and remind myself my number one goal right now is to take care of my family. They're the number one priority, and when I lose sight of that, nobody wins. So I could have all the success in the world of the books, and if I don't have my family right there loving me and cheering me because they still feel loved and secure, then I have nothing. So mm-hmm. whenever I do get frustrated, I just have to say, you know what, it's okay. There's plenty of time. I'm only 42, mm-hmm. almost 43. I could have years and years still to write. I mean, they are not
I'm
even
right
in high school yet. I mean, lots of these young adult authors are in their 50s and 60s because their kids are all gone. And I still have a fourth grader and a seventh grader. And I just have to remind myself, you can't do it all at one time, but you can just slowly do it and without sacrificing your family.
And that is exactly what we're talking about, balancing and not putting pressure on yourself. I'm the same age as you. I do this all the time with real estate. Well, I'm not at this level yet, even though I'm doing well. But I put this pressure and these unrealistic expectations on myself, and I make myself crazy when, you know, I'm doing just fine. What's the reason that I have to do this all now? You know, you have time, and don't do that to yourself. And even if we were 10 years older, you still can't live that way and put that kind of pressure on yourself. You have to, you know, you limit yourself, if you do that.
You do, and your kids would see your unhappiness, and your husband would see, oh, you're not satisfied in what our life is. And like I said, it just no one wins because no one's happy.
Right.
So it's really about living each moment, enjoying the journey,
mm-hmm.
not the destination necessarily.
True.
Yes.
And taking care of it. It's just like, I think I always say this about, you know, my girlfriends and I, we all struggle with being a professional and getting to the gym and, you know, getting taking care of everybody. And I always say, well, gosh, if I don't work out, nobody around me is going to be happy, you know, because if I don't feel good, nobody.
Well, I get you. Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I don't feel good about myself, then everything I do isn't at 150% that I want it to be. It's
makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, but you're right. I mean, that's a whole topic in itself, but it does relate to to what we're talking about, just the sense of empowerment.
Right.
Empowering women is that to feel empowered, I think you probably have to have a happy, healthy disposition internally, knowing that out of you is joy and love and kindness and what it is you can do to serve others. And I think, Janine, that's something that I'm getting a glimpse of you. You're that type of person that first and foremost knows that it's sort of like the Southwest airline thing. Put your oxygen mask on first so you can help others.
Right.
Sure. And I think it's also understanding and accepting that there are seasons in your life. And right now my season is to, number one, be mom and wife. And because those kids aren't always going to be there, though they are going to go away eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. Well, let's take a quick break, our last break, and when we come back, Janine, we'll talk about the blog you put on Facebook, The Painful Truth About Facebook. I read it. Very fascinating. You're a great writer. I could tell from just the blog in itself. And this is Empowering Women on the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network, live from Regis West in Peoria, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Sarah Zanzanos, and we'll be right back.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Empowering Women, brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. We're live from Regis West in Peoria, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Sarah Zontanos and our special guest, author Janine Caldwell, written 4 books. Fascinating. It sounds just absolutely incredible. And Janine, you come across, and I know you're this way in person, as a just delightful woman. Very, very inspiring.
Yes.
Very well, thank you.
You're more than welcome. And this is, I'm going to bring it back to Tara, because you read The Painful Truth About Facebook,
yes,
and that touched you.
It did. It did, because I have a lot of friends that talk about, you know, their struggles with Facebook. Well, you know, there was a time we did not have to deal with so many of the things social media has brought. You know, it would be pre-Facebook relationships were different. Even, you know, from your friends to your partners, you know, now getting a job, you know, people look on Facebook. Everything goes back to Facebook, and you're kind of pressured into being on social media. And, you know, I came across her blog, and I thought, oh, wow, this is great, because so many people wouldn't say this, and it really, I found that inspiring, as you know, for you to go out there and say it and put it up. And I'm going to read just a little part of it. It was called The Painful Truth About Facebook. Believe me when I say I wish I could be all light, full of positive thoughts and love all the time. I strive for that. I really do. But let's get human for a moment and accept I've got my work cut out for me as far as that ambition. So with that preamble, I'm going to be honest about something. And as I get ugly real, I wonder if anyone else feels the same way I do. Are you ready for some brutal honesty? Here it is. Facebook makes me feel bad about myself. I know I shouldn't take social media so personally or give it so much power, but if you engage with Facebook at any level, I ask, how can you not? And then it goes on, and she also discusses, as an indie author, the challenges, because she, you know, social media is such a huge part of her promotion and publicity. I was talking to Janine. I don't think either one of us are insecure women, but, oh, my gosh, they didn't like my book over, they liked that book, or they, you know, people liked this and they didn't like that. And, you know, it can get really silly, you know, when you come down to it, that anyone is having to have these thoughts in any way, shape, or form, but it's real. And I think a lot of people feel this way. And she also talks about how, you know, it actually has made her doubt friendships and self-worth. And I hear this from a lot of people. You know, you knew somebody and you loved them, and then you start to see, I didn't know something like that about that, or they're, you know, vice versa, you know, and then all of a sudden being like, but I don't know, after about 2 years of this person on Facebook, I don't really know how I feel about this person anymore. But you can't just delete them because now you have a whole other set of problems. You delete them, and you have to, I've had to explain to people why I deleted them.
Really?
And which is, you think, I'll delete somebody. Nobody will even know. They don't notice.
And they notice.
Oh, they notice, and then you have to go, well, I mean, in the pre-Facebook world, if you didn't really get a good vibe or you didn't really mesh with somebody, you just didn't see them or talk to them, right? Mm. You just didn't call them, and probably didn't go to the same places very often, and you didn't engage. But now you have to actually make a statement and disconnect from them.
Wow.
Or hide them on Facebook. Or I mean, I don't know. It's just craziness. So anyway, it struck me. I think it's a very big topic. I think a lot of people feel this way. I know in real estate, I'm friends with a lot of realtors on Facebook, and you want that because you keep in the loop of the industry, and it's great. But then you have the braggers, and you're just like, okay. You know, everyone struggles with, in some level, in their industry and having to see certain things, and how do you deal with that and whatnot.
So Janine, this blog was very telling. Talk a little bit about this. What specifically happened, if there was anything, to have you write this blog? And you end up, the blog is, do I need Facebook therapy? We could conduct that right here, right now on the radio.
Well, I had such response from this blog. And a lot of times, because we're so inundated with information on the web, you just don't know if anyone's even reading anything you're putting out there, because if they don't like or comment, how are you to know that they even read it? And there wasn't anything specifically. It was just kind of overall, I'm starting to just be confused of what the rules are on Facebook. What happens is I get readers, new readers, and they want to add me as their personal friend rather than just liking my author Facebook page on Facebook. And so you don't want to not promote your books with all your friends and family and old high school friends and these new readers, because they may not have liked your author Facebook page and will never see the post there. So you're kind of forced to, and I didn't want to just, keep selling to my friends. I know, you already bought them. Okay, I'm sorry. This isn't for you. This is for the other people. But then you can't really say that in a post, and it just gets very blurred, the lines. I'm using this for business, but I'm using it for social as well. And you end up just really getting your feelings hurt because either the new readers are afraid to like you, or it just becomes a popularity contest with other authors. I mean, you really don't know what the motivation is behind people liking or not liking anything that you post, or if you put a review on there. It's very unstable. You're relying on this unstable platform where people may or may not be signing in that day, and you don't know if they even saw your post. But then it starts making you question, well, okay, my friend from high school, she commented on this other gal that we know's post. Why didn't she comment on my post? And it just, which is ridiculous. Like, don't be so insecure. But I was very secure before in our friendship, but then that kind of got me questioning, well, maybe they don't like me as much, or maybe they don't care about my hopes and dreams that I want to be a, traditionally published author. It just, questions I didn't even have before, or doubts I had of friendships, now are popping up, which is just horrible.
And it is. I mean, you're not the only one. I hear this all the time. That's, again, why it struck me that you put it out there. I hear it in personal conversations with people, or, my siblings aren't on Facebook. They can't, they're like, oh, you're crazy. I can't believe you share with so many people and, blah, blah, blah. And I really feel, I'm a social person, and I feel it's a necessity also for being in real estate. I need that resource. However, I have tried now, after 6-7 years of being on Facebook, of limiting how, putting out positive messages and putting out my what I want to put out, but limiting what I take in, if that makes sense. You know, we still take things in, but not having such a having it mean so much, you know, because I know, just like you just said, I know you'll go through things and you're busy. You're not, you know, a lot of times I'm looking at Facebook while I'm waiting for somebody or on my phone or I'm doing something else. And it's not that you intentionally miss somebody's post or, you know, I've had people say, oh, you didn't, you know, well, you didn't say anything. Did you see my daughter's whatever? Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't do that on purpose. I just, you know, I work and I'm busy. And
yeah, it's
a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think it does, the comparing, you know, you said about comparing yourself, and that is something I hear a lot as well. You know, people is starting to feel bad about themselves because, oh, so-and-so had this. And I actually have talked to counselors about this, that's an issue. That actually therapists are seeing people coming in with this issue of, well, people on Facebook and everybody on Facebook, but everybody on Facebook is putting out what they want to put out. And I know and you know that there are stories and people on Facebook that, you know, behind the scenes there's another world there. We all have another world. And so it's very misleading, and you can't take it so personal, but we all at times have, I think.
Well, that's why I kind of stopped following, like, all the authors that I was following, because it really wasn't helping me or building me up in any way, and everybody's running their own race, and it was making me look and compare at the success that they may or may not be having. It's all an illusion, really, versus what my success with my books are. And I needed to just stop doing that because it wasn't helping anybody and just stay in my lane kind of thing.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah. And I think it's probably a good lesson that, you know, we all, we certainly all want to be recognized for things we've done, things that we're proud of.
Of course.
And certainly, Janine, you know, your books are something to be very, very proud of. And, you know, Facebook has seemed to have changed how people communicate a bit. And and sometimes we don't even know the meaning. For example, if they don't, you know, like or comment, it may not necessarily mean they don't, you know, anything, actually. It may mean they haven't noticed or, you know, they're busy, maybe they're stressed themselves, and maybe that's how to look at Facebook. I don't know much about Facebook. I guess I should learn. But I know I don't do much on Facebook, although I think I have like 3,600 friends. I don't know where they came from, actually, maybe from the radio. But I've restricted everyone. I don't think anyone can
see any of you.
Yeah, because I don't even go on there. I don't even post
stuff. Yeah, I know you don't.
Well, our business page. Well, Greg does. It's interesting. Social media, I mean, Janine, I mean, if you think about it, that, you know, you see young people these days on a date at a restaurant sitting with each other. They're not, they're texting each other. They're not even talking.
Yeah.
I mean, how bizarre
is that? I know,
it's
sad. Yeah, it's definitely changed our world. And I don't know that it's always been a healthy way, but I think you're right, what you just said. I can't tell you how many times I've come into contact with somebody like, oh, I saw, did this, and I follow you on Facebook. I'm like, oh, I've never even seen you like anything of mine on Facebook. And, oh, well, I just don't do that. I know this and this and this. And, oh, wow. People you don't even know are noticing anything in your life. And
know, it's confusing. It doesn't really help anything. It's just confusing me more.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think we're all going to have to. You wonder, is there going to be just this backlash of, you know, like people not wanting to use it anymore because it is so.
I think it's happening already. I think most of the comments I received were, I feel the same way. I feel that emptiness is in my life too, and that's why I don't post very much, or I don't go on very much, or I take off for the weekends, and So I think it's already happening because I just think that we've been punishing ourselves enough, haven't we?
Right. I mean, life is hard enough without a whole other dynamic added into the mix of now we have to, I mean, just everything's in front of you. Everything constantly in your face.
Fast and quicker.
Yeah.
Everything's lightning speed. There's no question about it. But I think, if we could look for what could be good from technology and just focus on that,
exactly. That
might be the way to go because technology is here to stay. I mean, it is rapid.
Right.
I mean, look at mobile devices now. That's going to be the thing of the future, right. If it not right now, actually.
Well, and on a positive note, and Janine and I were talking about this, even though my business doesn't necessarily come from my Facebook posts, I get a lot of my business through people contacting me on my inbox on Facebook. So that's how they find me. And there's connections with people that I want, a lot of people that I want to have, and I really am genuinely interested in other people's lives. It's just you have to take it with a grain of salt, focus on the good things about it, and use it in a very limited way.
That's appropriate for you. In fact, I'm noticing, Janine, I'm on your Facebook page right now, and we have 3 mutual friends.
And see,
one is Sarah Santanos, but the other two, I can't remember who they are, though. Justina Kurth. Who's Justina Kurth? Do we know her?
I don't.
I don't either.
Say your name again.
But she's up. Justina Kurth.
Oh, she's an aerobics instructor from the community center here in Anthem.
Oh, okay. She's a friend of mine, evidently. And then
all that aerobics you've been doing.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it. And Terry Brandfass or something. Does that sound familiar? Another friend.
No.
Yeah. See, that's the thing with Facebook. There's friends out there, and I go, who are these people?
I know. And sometimes you end up, and you go through stages where you purge people because you start adding.
Like the movie? Oh, not like the movie. You haven't seen that, have you?
No.
Ooh, scary. Janine, have you seen that movie, Purge?
I haven't seen it, but I know what the premise is.
Yeah, it's a very interesting premise. But yeah, purging Facebook friends.
Sometimes you have to because you add them for different reasons, and then you're like, wait, what? Who is this person a year later? And when you don't even know who they are, or
that's sad.
That's sad. Or then the other thing I've struggled with is friends, old friends that they literally have not commented or talked to you in, let's say, a couple years, 4 years, 5. Why do I need to keep sharing my I need them on there?
That's
interesting.
But then
you get reprimanded possibly if you take them off.
I mean, by who?
I am not.
You're reprimanded too?
Every time I've deleted somebody that I knew,
they get mad.
They've asked me why.
Wow. Well, how about this? Here's a quick story. I'm sitting at one of my favorite restaurants, Wildflower Bread Company, around 8:30 at night one night, and someone calls me and said, "Hey, what's up?" I go, "Who is this?" She goes, "I'm a Facebook friend." I go, "How'd you get my number?" And I'm thinking, "Well, I'll give it out on the radio." So, and she goes, "No, I just got your number off Facebook and want to see what you're doing."
Oh my God.
So I'm quickly saying, "Well, what's your name?" And I go to my Facebook friends and I find her and I go, "This is weird. Maybe it's a generational thing because evidently she seemed younger, probably in her 20s. And maybe that's how they do things. They just randomly go on Facebook, call people and say, "Hey, what's up?"
Well, and it makes, and on that note, it makes it so much easier to, I'm not saying I haven't been guilty of it, to cross barriers that you would never cross.
That's a very good point right there, actually.
You know, if somebody's offended me, if I have to let them know, how do I let them know? Oh, you just go on Facebook and contact. I mean, you can do, anybody can reach you.
And you could say whatever you want, I guess.
And you could really, I mean, I guess you can.
Yeah, I don't think I would have had the courage to post that blog post if it wasn't just I knew I wouldn't have to see anybody's faces after I posted
it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yeah, no, but I think it was really good. I really, I haven't shared it yet. I wanted to share it. I was thinking I would wait till after the show and then I could share her blog because I thought
very
it was so cool that you did that and, you know, brave.
No doubt, and really well written, well said, and it will get people to think. So you are contributing in more ways than you can imagine. And Janine Caldwell, thank you so much for being a guest on Empowering Women today. Can you give us some contact information, how they can get your books, how they can get to you, maybe you have a website, that type of stuff?
Yeah, sure. The best place is my website, and that's my name, JanineCaldwell.com. And there you can find all the places to reach me on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and email. And I have a books page, and it has all the links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, the paperback version. All the links for each book are on there. So all they would have to do is one click, and it would take you right to the link.
Well, we're very proud of you. Of course, you're up, you know, here in the local area in Phoenix, and it's really been an honor and pleasure. We really appreciate you.
Yes, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so much. And
well,
thanks
have a
so
great
much for
night.
Having me.
Okay,
absolutely.
You too.
More
thank
than,
you. Thank you so much. And let's take another quick break, and we'll be back for some more discussion. Probably about another half hour we got to talk about He Said, She Said, other segments coming up. And this is Empowering Women, brought to you by Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. We are live from Regis West in Peoria. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Tara Zantanos. We'll be right back.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Empowering Women, brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. We're live from Regis West in Peoria, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Tara Zontanos. And again, thank you to Janine Caldwell, great author, four books. We encourage you all to check out her website, JanineCaldwell.com, JanineCaldwell.com. And now, our other segment, segment three, he said, she said, a popular segment. Everyone wants to know what the opposite sex is always thinking.
Yes.
And you have a question for me.
I do.
What is the question?
The question that will just maybe save my the rest of my life.
Oh, there we go.
With men.
Yes.
Well, Dave, are there things that you feel that men innately think that maybe we could gain some knowledge from? Something, you know, you guys tend to do some things that I don't understand, and I'd like to know.
Like what?
You can get started. But, you know, there's obviously scientific proof that our brains are different.
Yeah.
The male-female brain is different. So what is it?
Here's what I think, because I do seminars on this. I think typically men are like want to be a problem solver, and that could be a problem in itself, because I think when a female talks to, you know, her husband, her boyfriend, whatever the case might be, I don't think they want usually the man to solve a problem. I think they want to be listened to.
Correct.
And what I found is if you just listen with attention. Now, there's a lot of men will hear this from probably psychologists. So they probably go to therapy, and the psychologist will say, just listen to her. But they're listening, and their eyes are rolling. They're making nonverbal gestures like, okay, is there, you know, is that all? Come on, hurry it up. The ball game's starting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they're about to do the kickoff. And that's a problem.
Right.
It's not football is the problem. It's men's attitude is the problem. And I think if they listen truly with curiosity and attention, with deep caring, I think what's going to happen, you will not react. Like a lot of men, like, oh, you're nagging me again. You're talking at me, not to me. Rather than just listen, because eventually it winds down.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually it allows the woman to sort of, run their, the steam just runs out, and they start to appreciate you for listening, because everyone wants to be listened to.
Correct. In fact, that's what we were going to talk about at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be heard.
And I really believe that. I think that's very, very important. And if you do this, I think if men do this more, you'll find if you're impatient, it's not about what the female is talking to you about. It's about your own internal buttons that are being pushed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you feel, impatient because you like the game may be starting, or you have an appointment. But you should look to yourself first, and don't just think the cause is because someone wants to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
The cause is your own internal makeup within that is causing you to react a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really good advice. And a lot of men just can't do it because they're, and it's not an excuse, but I think with the world the way it is, fast-paced, they're stressed. They're only thinking about them, so they need to re-identify what their role is. It's not, they're not the center of the universe like they thought they were.
Because you feel like they are always in their minds trying to solve the problem.
Yep.
And maybe focus on the things that make them feel achieved, because men
well, they want
to feel.
Yeah, like they are, a lot of them, they're the, whether you call them the king or the person in charge, and certainly they could be in charge, but they feel so much pressure. But it's such an easy way to go about relationships if you just listen. Listen. If it's a bad time, you can express it. But if you react out of anger, like not this again, you see men do that. Like, oh, you're always, you're nagging me. Why don't you just get over it? That's the worst thing you could ever. That's the worst thing you say to people.
That statement right there, I cannot tell you how many times.
Okay.
Do not ever tell me to get over it.
I know. Well, how does that, let me ask you then, how do you react? What does that mean to you if someone says that? That they don't really care?
It means, get over it. What, to me, that's.
Yeah. What does it mean?
Like the hugest slap in the face.
Yeah.
Like, what I did to bother you or hurt you is irrelevant.
Exactly.
Just get over it.
I know. It's disgusting, isn't it? I agree with you.
Totally.
Now, what if the man instead said, rather than just get over it, what if they said, what can I do to make it better? How can I help?
Or
just listen.
Or just said, trust me, if you are one of the lucky or unlucky men that have been in my life, they know I've,
anyone you want to say hi to?
Hey, guys.
You had to do plural.
Okay. Anyway, I mean,
the boards are lit up. We got like 100, at least 100 phone lines.
Oh, God. I'm always like, don't tell me to get over it. Why don't you just say, I understand.
That
bothers you. Of course that would bother
you. Sure.
And I'm always trying to reverse it. Okay, then let's stop. But they always, of course, want to explain why you need to just don't talk about it. Don't bring this up. Don't bring that up. No, listen to if it were turned around and I did that or I said that, how would you feel? And you have to calm them to the point or get them to the point to focus enough to say, I really wouldn't. That wouldn't be so cool. I wouldn't really like that. But usually it's, I don't want to talk about it. Guys, I don't want to talk about it. Well,
They just shut down.
But then why do you don't get to do these things or say these things or hurt somebody or offend somebody and get away with it in my book? I mean, maybe that's why I have relationship problems, but in my opinion, you don't do that.
So you're putting this in context where someone maybe went out with a boyfriend or whatever, and in that context, they did something to hurt your feelings.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I can come up with a million, but I've definitely had my share of that kind of, those kind of inappropriate things in my life between my wife, my divorce and, my different boyfriends. You know, the things that that just aren't appropriate, and it would not be okay if I did it.
Yeah.
So it's not okay if you do it. So don't tell me to get over it.
But yeah, they just heard us. Like, big deal.
Big deal.
Yeah, they minimize it.
They minimize something that maybe, you're making it bigger than it is. No, you know what? Actually, let me sleep on it. I'm not. Because I slept on it, and I'm not. And and that's the point where you, in any relationship, if you're feeling, if you're going through that kind of stuff, you have to step back and let them realize it is real. Those kinds of things, whatever they are, in any relationship, they have to be addressed, and they have to be addressed with respect mutually, and both people have to be willing to say it is, what you say is relevant.
And what you're really talking about sounds like to me is they're not honoring you or respecting you.
I always have said that. You know, what that is not honoring to me. And I'll just put this in really quick. When I was married to somebody that was publicly known in his world in the bodybuilding industry, and I'd see pictures, and I'm not an insecure, jealous girl, but if you see your husband like this, their face meshed up against each other with pitchy face.
You mean with some other girl?
With some girl at a bodybuilding contest, and what do you mean? That's nothing. Well,
take us through that. When you saw that happening, how did you feel, and what did you say? Did you think it's just part of a PR stunt?
For many, and again, anybody who knew me in that industry, in fact, I had one of the wives of another pro bodybuilder ask me, how are you? You don't go on the trips. You don't, you only go when he competes, and, it doesn't bother you. Do you not get insecure? I said, no, I trust him. Oh, gosh, no. But at the point in my relationship when I did start to have some trust issues, that's when that picture, that cute picture went from a PR thing to, no. Because that once I got...
I see their faces, the photo's getting their faces, but where are their hands? That's what you're really talking about.
I think the trust is broken in any way.
It's very tough.
It's very tough. And so once that's broken, then you would see that stuff, and you would go, that's not really respectful and honoring to me. I get that it's, you take pictures. That part doesn't bother me, but it's the level of intimacy of the picture maybe it wasn't so innocent.
Or maybe that's the woman's intuition.
And it was.
Yeah, and that's very, you do, very tough.
Yeah, it is tough because you feel things and you go, no, that's not.
Trust your instinct.
But always trust
your instinct. Yeah, it makes sense.
It really
actually
does.
Yeah, I think so. And, so it is a big topic difference between men and women, but if they took this advice and the men listen with curiosity and sincerity. I mean, you don't want to just pretend listen and watch your reaction. There's a reason. Look for the positive intention. There's a reason they want to talk about it. And let it just sort of play out without ever saying, get over it.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that. I agree. It's really not a very good thing.
But it goes for men, too. I mean, if I said to you, get over it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you
be
offended?
I would.
Well, usually if that's said, that means there's something more behind what they did. If they say, well, okay, let's talk about it, that probably means that either the thing maybe that you think happened didn't happen, or misunderstanding in some way, but usually if someone's defensive on something like that, whether it's relationship or not, that usually right away means something's up.
Absolutely. That's a really good point that you just made. Is any the defensiveness, now looking back in my life, it's always, mm-hmm. there's always a reason, always.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That does make a lot of sense. And so it's those are, you know, some things that I think men and women should think about. And there's so many other topics, though. I mean, it can go on and on. And sadly, it's like a rotating, it's like musical chairs out there. And it just, you know, where's the good old days? Or were there ever good old days? But I think it is possible.
Yeah, I do.
And it's, but how discouraging is it to you? I mean, I think men don't care. I think they hit, you know, whatever, 40, 50, and a Porsche to them is as good as a, you know, as a girlfriend. In fact, a lot of them don't even probably want girlfriends.
You know, I think I'm in a stage right now where I think I got, I just don't, I kind of don't care either. I mean, that's, and I was the, you know, love queen and marriage and, oh, it's so wonderful and, you know, it's not that I don't believe in it, and like you said, it's of course it's possible, but you go through a phase where you're like, you know, I just don't, I kind of care about myself right now, and there's always, there are always guys out there, but, you know, you get kind of tired of all the nonsense, and I'm not saying it's all men by any means, where, you know, there's two sides to everything, but you do kind of, you don't put up that effort, and you're, I'm 42. I don't want to. I'm exhausted. I know, but after living with men for 20, I've lived in a home with a man for 20 years now.
Wow.
Total. Between, you know,
20, it's raining men.
It's raining.
That was a song. One of your favorites, Dave.
And, you know.
Oh, no. I like. It's raining women. Okay,
come on.
You go. Like,
wow, you've been alone today. You're,
so for 20 years, so it's nice. It's freeing to have your own identity, perhaps, and your own sense of space.
It is
good
you
for you.
Yeah.
And I like this. I'm on Facebook still since I started on it.
Yeah.
Who said that?
You learned how to log in.
Very. I would like my life to be a statement of love. Who said that?
Oh, that's my cover.
I know. It's lovely. It's really.
But it's of love and compassion if you open it. Okay.
Oh, you're
what
supposed
do you
to
think,
it?
Dave? How do you
Oh, you
got to
click
that?
On it? Oh, I would like my life to be a statement of love and compassion. And where it isn't, that's where my work lies. Nice. Ramdas, I know.
And that,
yes.
And that is even more important. And that's where my work lies.
Yeah.
Because we are.
Nice.
We can never think that we're where we need to be.
Wow. And,
we always
and,
have to...
and then right to the right, it says, become Caesar's VIP. Come earn total rewards credits from home. But, oh, that's just an ad that
that's
popped
just
up.
An ad. Yeah.
Oh, but I like Las Vegas. Okay. Anyway, so I like the statement. This is really good. I would like my life to be a statement of love and compassion. And where it isn't, that's where my work lies. That in itself says it all. Mm-hmm. If men and women really looked at this in a deep way and practiced it,
yeah,
how would the world be different? How would relationships be different?
Oh, my gosh.
It'd be indescribable.
And the compassion, I think we'll just wrap up with this,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
About the listening and the compassion. You know, I always
say,
you know, people, how many times are you talking to somebody and they're really not listening to
no.
you. And they really don't care either.
No.
I mean, they might listen and then...
But are they really hearing?
Hearing you.
Yeah.
They're usually listening with the intent of responding, which annoys me more than... That's one of my pet peeves when I'm talking to somebody and, you know, they really don't care. And so you just... That's how you weed people out in life, obviously, because you can't... nobody wants to feel like they're not important. And I think that's what that says, the, you know, a statement of love and compassion. If you told me, oh, my gosh, this and this happened today, and I want to know about it. I want to talk to you about it. I want to hear about it. I care. I really do. I don't want to go, well, I have work to do.
Yeah, a lot of people do that.
They do it. And they'll do it right to your face. I've been on the phone with somebody just recently saying, oh, this and this and this is going on, and, you know, I have that thyroid disease, and it really does, you know, sometimes make me very ill. And I was talking to them about it, and then they cut me off to ask me for something they needed, and I said, I don't like this.
No, I hear you.
You know?
Listening means really actively listening.
Actively listening. And on that note, being in a sales industry, I think that is one of the greatest keys to success is listening. Salespeople talk, but they shouldn't be talking. They should be listening.
Yeah, there's no doubt in your industry, many industries, by the way, but it's very important, and that really makes a great professional to be able to connect, listen, and relate or not relate. Even if you can't relate, you can find something that is relatable because people love that if you can get a glimpse of what someone's going through, whether it's good or bad. It doesn't really matter. Wow, this has been an amazing show so far, and we're really towards the end of it, and we had Greg chime in, and he seems to agree with us on many of these men-women issues.
Sure.
Yes, it is good. And again, a thank you and shout-out to author Janine Caldwell, writing some great books. The trilogy looks pretty cool, Rematch, Double Fault, and Deuce, and her fourth book is Visited. So I like the other thing that you said, it's in her bio also. It's clean, writer, age-appropriate. That's always very good, you know, the good old-fashioned ways of yesteryear, which we seem to have lost at times, and that's unfortunate. So, Tara, how do people get in touch with you? Any comments?
Facebook.
I guess it would be.
I do have a website, easyhomesandrentals.com, but I really, Facebook and my email.
Via Facebook.
Facebook.
TaraZ@gmail.com is my email.
Excellent.
So.
Phone number, do you want to give it out?
Sure, 602-430-3397. Please do not text me after midnight.
After
ask
midnight?
Ask me for anything.
Really, what happens after midnight? That's the song.
I don't know, but it's funny being in real estate. You have a public number, and I've had my share of those.
Oh, of calls.
Yeah.
Oh.
And could you help me find a house?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's the clean version. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well, I'll meet you there in 5 minutes. That is amazing. Anyway, Tara, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next month, no doubt about it. And this is Empowering Women, brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. And we'll see everyone next month.